It's projected that almost 2 million New York residents, that's one in four, will face hunger sometime this year. While access to good, nutritious food is not a new problem in New York, the pandemic we're living through has made this situation exponentially worse.
These are Great Depression-era soup lines, bread lines, food lines. This is a crisis of epic proportions.
This week on 880 In Depth, as we focus on things we're thankful for, our health, our families, our work, we take a few minutes to look at those who need our attention and support. The growing number of people among us who are not getting the basic human need of enough food.
There is food for everyone, father, daughter, mother, son. There's enough for everyone in our green and growing home. There's enough.
That's the voice of our friend, Tom Chapin, one of the driving forces behind the organization Why Hunger, co-founded by his late brother, Harry Chapin, more than four decades ago. Why Hunger is a partner of WCBS News Radio 880, more like family, actually. Each year around this time, we focus the spotlight on the hunger needs of our community and give voice to the good work Why Hunger does along with their grassroots partners. Their work is more urgently important than ever before. More from Tom later, and some info on how you can help the work of Why Hunger by bidding on a virtual Tom Chapin concert. But first, I'm Tim Scheld from WCBS News Radio 880, and this is 880 In Depth. And I wanted to give the stage to Why Hunger this week and their talented executive director, Noreen Springstad, to hear more about the crisis of hunger in New York. And Noreen asked to bring along on this Zoom conversation Dr. Melanie Samuels, the founder and CEO of the Campaign Against Hunger in New York, a Brooklyn-based food pantry that started more than two decades ago. Here's our conversation.
Well, actually, it started in my home, Tim. What happened is I heard that there was a woman that was in need. She was disabled, mother of four, single mother. And so what we did was to pack a simple bag, just an act of kindness, compassion, and drove all the way from my home to hers and gave her a bag, and then find out that it was not an isolated situation, but so many other individuals were in need. And after that, I realized that we were feeding five, then 10, then 50, and the rest is history. Now we are doing, before COVID-19, we're doing approximately 30,000 individuals per month.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big number. And Noreen, we get to see each other quite often in our planning for this time of year. We normally spend all of our energies working about this topic for Thanksgiving week on your organization's annual fundraiser Hungerthon, which is, you know, more important than ever before. No,
it really is. I think the pandemic has been illuminating to just how close people were living to the edge of being on a food line, like Melanie is talking about. And our work is more important than ever because the human need has increased dramatically. And it's such a pleasure to be on the show with two good friends, and especially with the Campaign Against Hunger. I've worked on their farm. I've worked in their pantry. I know the power of this frontline organization to nourish people, but to also change lives.
In a normal year, New York City would see over 25 million visits to soup kitchens and food pantries by individuals and families to meet their basic food needs. That number, because of the pandemic, may actually triple this year. Last week, the Campaign Against Hunger in New York held a Thanksgiving food drive to help bring food to the needy in their community.
Well, Tim, it was in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, the heart of where poverty lies. When we think of Bed-Stuy, we know that you hear the word gentrification, you hear the words affluent, but there, in all of this, there is a vast number of families that we work with that are tremendously in need, and where food insecurity has grown in such a way that It's unbelievable. So the event, as we are talking about the event had about 2,000 people online, which was unbelievable. I can't use the word amazing, but it was 2,000 individuals online. Of course, 75% of those have never been to our pantry, but because of COVID-19, because of the vast need that we are facing right now, so many are in need, and we find that they were online. But the good thing is that we were able to make sure that they got what they needed.
Can I ask both of you, and I'll start with Noreen, the impact of New York City schools closing has got to be deeply concerning, because a lot of the young people, children, who were getting food in the city were getting it through schools, no?
That's exactly right. And just take in what Melanie said, 75% increase. That's what we're hearing all around the tri-state area and the country. Kids not being in school means they're not getting school breakfast and school lunch. One of the most powerful things about the New York City school system is that just a few short years ago, Why Hunger was part of a coalition of activists and grassroots organizations working to make sure that no child in New York City would go hungry and that nutritious food would be a human right. And that happened with universal school meals. Now, when you're not going to school, you don't have that access. So it does reveal the people don't always make the connection of hunger to government policy to politics, really, that universal school meals was done by the mayor's office, by the hard work of the council to ensure that all children got food. Now that's all been upended. Many sites are serving meals from school. There is a pandemic EBT, money going on your EBT card, but it really hasn't been publicized. And I think that is one of the reasons why, Melanie, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of parents with children who are not getting meals in school.
Yes, and you're right, Noreen. It's devastating to see the EBT is there. We are helping a lot of families to achieve as much. It's not a lot of money, but it makes a difference. But what we are finding out is that a lot of the mothers that are coming with their children, they're telling us it's very difficult now because, of course, it's more homeschool than anything else. We have to face the facts that families are actually in need. And so they're telling us how difficult it is. So as an emergency feeding program, as a pantry, we have to also make sure that the food that we send home now is kid friendly. It's easily accessible by children. We used to do this on the weekends, but now it's a 5-7 day a week chore to make sure that whatever we're giving families, that kids are able to access it.
Do we have concerns about the supply of food for these people that are in need?
Yes, there's always there was before the pandemic. There was a tremendous need before the pandemic. And Noreen, Why Hunger knows this. We have echoed it so many times that we were running out of food. It was difficult. And I'll tell you, when the pandemic hit, unbelievable, we had no food. And what was coming to us, we could not serve our community because it was not edible. You can't have a community that 23% of those that you're serving is already diabetic. A larger number is suffering from hypertension and obesity, and we turn around and we give them junk. So we had to make sure that we had enough healthy food to distribute. It took a while for the city, for the state, and everyone to coordinate to get things in order. But in the meantime, you had families online that needed food immediately. And so the Campaign Against Hunger had to purchase food. And I'll tell you, it was startling to know things like simple grain, anything that was whole wheat. It took us 3 months before we could have seen our shipment to come in. It had gotten to a panic stage in the first 3 months of COVID. It was very difficult for us. One, you're talking about social distancing. You're talking about families on the line. You're talking about a wraparound line. And then you're talking about fear of death. And it was just so difficult. And still, and to top it off, we had to face the fact that we had not enough resources. And I'll say we still don't have enough resources, because after the holiday season, Tim, what is said about all of this, January, February, March, when no one thinks about hungry, that's when it really hits.
Go ahead, Noreen.
I was going to say, that is just paints a picture, right, of something we never thought we would see in our lifetime. These are Great Depression era soup lines, bread lines, food lines that we haven't seen a hunger crisis like this in. I'm at Why Hunger for 3 decades. Melanie has been working on this for over 25 years. And this is a crisis of epic proportions. To be in the human service business, providing people food and not knowing if you're going to have it is, it's dire. And I think, Melanie, you made such a great point, and this is why we love the Campaign Against Hunger. It's not just about any food. Junk food does not build health resilience. You need to have proper nutrition and nourishment. And the pivot that you've had to make to be kid-friendly and kid meals, everyone knows how picky children can be, that the burden that has and the responsibility that is on these frontline agencies, just like the Campaign Against Hunger, is enormous. The social distancing, the sanitizing, volunteers that won't come out, long lines, and the results of the pandemic is just a skyrocketing hunger.
I wanted to ask both of you, the pandemic has been especially cruel in communities of color in our city. A lot of it, you know, is putting a spotlight on the inequities of healthcare that we knew existed, but the real life and death results have really shown through in communities. My expectation is that hunger is very, very similar, that it's especially in the COVID era, it's especially cruel in communities of color. Am I right?
That's exactly right. Melanie, please speak to this, but this is why hunger talks about root causes like racism and the marginalization and invisibilizing of people and people of color and people of color who have higher rates of hunger and diabetes and chronic health conditions that need nourishing food.
Both of you are correct, and it's sad, it's hurtful to know, because one, I'm a woman of color, and you're watching your community and already, and what is so bad about all this? This is not a new problem. We have been echoing this for over 20 years, that our community needs to see healthier food. We use the word food desert lightly, and everybody talks about it, but it's not being impacted the way it should be, in the sense of we're not getting the right product into the hands of families. The pandemic hit, and of course, who is the greatest recipients? We're not talking about recipients of fortune or recipients of house. We're talking about a health crisis, a pandemic. So many families have lost their loved ones. It is very difficult. And one of the things I believe, of course, there is a health crisis in our neighborhood, but I think that the COVID-19 took the covers off and let everyone know that we have been saying this for years. Let's do something. Come on. Bring the playing field to an equal level, where what goes for the geese goes for the gander. Why can't we now get to a place where it doesn't matter, it should not matter, when it comes to offering healthy food to families, what neighborhood you live in, or what color your skin is. It should be that this is something that is a right to every family. And it bothers me to see that we have to work so hard. And I'm telling you this, Tim, and Noreen can echo my sentiments, that for an African-American woman as myself, it gets hard, because you have to be fighting. It's a battle out there to bring the resources in for the families. And when you see that family's immune system were one of the main reasons why so many died, our seniors died, so many families are without, so many children are, it bothers me, because food again, if we were taking care of the bodies, or they were giving access, not because you are poor or you're in a place where you cannot afford to put food on the table the way you'd like to. It is not fair that they should not get what's really needed. We need to change system. And I don't want to go any further, because then I'm going to tell you that we need to revamp some systems and put some things in place. We need to seriously think about families right now. And it bothers me to see what's going on. I'm sorry.
Well said, Melanie. She's a champion for representing the voice of the community and standing in solidarity with Why Hunger. We've been saying this for many, many years too. We need to take a systems approach. We need to look at root causes. We need a framing that's about human rights, that's about every human having access to nutritious food. These are heroic, expensive efforts on the front lines of America, 54 million people across the country struggling with hunger. And kudos to you, Dr. Samuels, because you're trying to do two things, right? You're trying to feed people and you're trying to change and challenge the systems that are at the root causes of hunger and poverty. That's economic injustice, health inequity, racism, and how our food is grown. Those are the things that we need to tackle and build a bigger movement for change.
And
part of the reason I wanted to get you all together was to also talk about how people could help. And so I want to begin to talk about that. I did want to ask, however, because I've got two experts here, is there a role for restaurants? We know that restaurants have employees that are struggling, out of work. We know that they can produce food. I mean, could we, I'm a dreamer, sorry about it. Could we have a Marshall Plan that the government could come in and pay restaurants to employ their people and to allow for, to help produce food?
I think some of that is going on. I know Chef Jose Andres is doing some of that. Danny Meyer is doing some of that, but Tim, I like the way you think. We got to go big here, right? We need a bigger game plan. These isolated interventions do not solve the systemic problem. And that's one of the roles Why Hunger plays. We weave together these exceptional organizations to build a more powerful movement for change. So what is that Marshall Plan? I think that's what we need to work on together. And the restaurant industry is getting decimated right now. And those workers are in need of help. It's also an opportunity. There's other groups and alliances like the Food Chain Workers Alliance, Restaurant Opportunities, people who are organizing in the industry to come up with solutions to demand better pay, to demand hazard pay, to get sick days. All of those things are very interconnected into the bigger picture.
Well, let me go ahead, Dr. Samuels. I was going to see.
Saying, ditto. Well said, Noreen. I know during the pandemic, so many chefs and restaurants have just rolled up their sleeves and started helping and reaching families, which is needed, especially for our seniors, because there's so many underlying issues where our seniors are concerned. Everyone is not technology savvy. And so we find that they can't access as much as they want to. I would say the city did work hard, and others and the private sector jumped in and made a tremendous difference in getting that. But I like how you're thinking, as Lorraine said, there's still so much more to be done, and there's still other corporate or restaurants that need to get on board. And I think this can be done if we come together as a team. And I add to this why, because what we did different as an organization, the Campaign Against Hunger, we are a choice pantry, but during the pandemic, we shift our entire work model. And we moved from curbside to right now we have 11,000 square feet warehouse that we engage 250 partners where we can't go, where City Harvest don't go or the food bank because of their building capacity and their model, we were able to get food in the intricate areas where it was needed the most. And we're still doing that. And that's why 14,000 families every week are being fed by us.
That's terrific. Noreen, people who are listening to this may know your organization by name because every year around this time, we shine the spotlight. The organization works 365, 24/7, right? But this is a time where we think about it because Thanksgiving week is always a thing. Tell us about Hungerthon and how people can help and how that help will last well beyond just Thanksgiving week.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Samuels and I are partners every day of the year, and I think it's important for people to act locally in Bed-Stuy and in the greater metropolitan area to get involved with a cause. Hungerthon is an opportunity to shine a light on these amazing projects and to support Why Hunger's work. So if you go to hungerthon.org, we have some amazing gifts this year. I'm wearing my John Lennon, Imagine, multicolored t-shirt, which is really wonderful. And we count on CBS 880's listeners to support us so we can continue our good work with partners like the Campaign Against Hunger and many, many other organizations who are working this year to meet dire human needs and address people's hunger crisis. So hungerthon.org is where you can make a donation, receive some great gifts, and also bid on some really cool auction items.
Dr. Samuels, tell me about the Campaign Against Hunger and how people can help you.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity, Noreen. Thank you. The Campaign Against Hunger is, again, we are easily accessed through TCAH, which is TCAHNYC.org, the Campaign Against Hunger, NYC.org. And there you can donate. But again, we have worked so closely with Why Hunger, and supporting Why Hunger is a great opportunity to support us also.
I did promise that I was going to ask both of you about what drives you. I'd love to wind up the conversation with you about what is it that drives you? What was it 20 some odd years ago when you connected with that single mom who needed help and all of a sudden it seemed to have changed your life, right?
Yeah. It wasn't, I never dreamt to be sitting in this seat, and it was never a part of my thought, mind. I was doing well. I was happy in the space that I was, but you know what? When you love your neighbors, it makes a difference. And what drives me is just the compassion. It bothers me when I see anyone, it doesn't matter who they are, everyone should be taken care of to the best of our ability. I know we can't eradicate everything that is wrong, but I think making sure someone has a healthy meal is important to me, and that's what drives me. In Thanksgiving, what means much to me is when a senior comes and say, I live alone, but if I get a turkey, my family will join me. I would love to make a turkey for my family. And I hate to turn that senior away, or a child that comes to us and it's their birthday, but their parents can't afford a birthday gift, and we're able to give them a birthday bag. And they're so excited because they can now have a birthday cake. These are the simple things that drive me for whatever I do. I tell myself the only one stipulation I have, don't ever speak down to any of our clients. Those customers that walk in, it could be one of us. It could have been me sitting there. I have been on the line where I had to wait to get WIC for my children. So I know how degrading sometimes you're treated. So what drives me is to make sure families are happy.
Noreen, you're up.
That's a tough act to follow, Tim. She's one of my heroes. So what drives me is injustice. I think it's unjust that any person does not have a meal. We all love food, right? We love our breakfast, our lunch, our dinner. And to have the thought that someone is going without or struggling, I think is one of the greatest injustices in our country, in our world. My four grandparents came from Ireland, and they came to America for a better life. And they really were fleeing a legacy of hunger and poverty. More than a million Irish died as a result of the Great Famine, the Great Hunger of the 1840s. And so it's kind of in my bones that my analysis about hunger is about political oppression, social injustice, and really keeping people down and marginalized. So that is a big part of what motivates me every day, is to make sure that nobody suffers the indignity of hunger.
Wow. A privilege to have both of you spend time with us so that we could share your message. And the world is a much better place, the two of you and the people who work with you. So thank you very much. May you both have a blessed Thanksgiving season. And let's pray that we all have a better year coming up.
We hope so.
Thank you, Tim. So thank you, Dr. Samuels.
Thank you, Noreen. Thank you, Tim. And happy Thanksgiving to all of you and to your listeners. Enjoy. And if you're in need of help, please reach out to us. We are just a phone call or takeaway.
And thanks also to Tom Chapin. I invite you to check out that hungerthon.org website for auction items to help support the efforts of Why Hunger, including the virtual private concert from Tom.
A child arrived just the other day, came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk when I was away, and he was talking for a note. And as he grew, he said, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, I don't know when, you'll get together then, son. We're gonna have a good time.
That's hungerthon.org. Be safe. And like Harry says, do something.
And if you want to hear the rest, you got a bid on me, man.